Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Actually, episode 100 for the 18th of September, 2010. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined in studio by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm good. Why did we not kick off by explaining that this is the 100th episode?
Because we just did.
To make the...
No, we're saving all the 100th episode stuff for the after show. But we are 100 episodes in. See, technically, Tech Actually isn't 100 episodes old. Technically. So... The after show, the geek actually, after show encompasses like the entire network, you see. So that's why we can do the 100th in that period of time.
I'm still celebrating. This is my celebrating place.
Fair enough. And you are welcome to celebrate. Everybody is welcome to celebrate. We have reached the 100th episode milestone for Geek Actually. Now, Tech Actually, I know, is just, its numbering was kind of juggled to meet up with the rest of our shows, but we consider this the 100th episode of Geek Actually broadcasts, and we actually have some really great statistics that we'll bring up in the after show, because I've actually managed to do some mathematics and work some stuff out, which is kind of neat. So we'll have a look at all that in our after show coming up in 2 hours, and for the audio listeners, it'll be out on Tuesday. We also have some guests coming in via Skype and so forth, so it's going to be a lot of fun. We got some clips from the past and so forth, so it's going to be a lot of fun. But that's not this show. This show is our official tech podcast of geekactually.com, and this week, before we do anything else, I think it is absolutely important that we do celebrate one other anniversary, which is this week it was the 35th anniversary of Industrial Light and Magic. Now, for those who don't know what Industrial Light and Magic is, shame on you. You should know what it is. But anyway, from Star Wars to The Last Airbender and approximately 264 other titles in the middle, ILM still stands as the biggest, most well-respected, and quite frankly, best special effects companies in the world. Yep. They're winner of 15 Best Visual Effects Oscars, 23 additional nominations, plus 23 technical awards for advances in technology and filmmaking from the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, and we salute you, ILM. And there
like,
we go.
Like that. I'm trying to figure out how to do a geek
now,
salute.
A little known fact. Now, we've actually talked about this once before on the show a long time ago, but just in case anybody has forgotten, and we are looking at geek credentials, ILM also created, well, not just ILM, but John Knoll, the visual effects supervisor for ILM, created as a summer project. So it's just something on the side with his brother Thomas. He designed that little program called Photoshop, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, that nobody uses it now, but, you know. But they designed Photoshop to use so that they could do things like digital mat work and stuff like that in the film The Abyss, and sold it to Adobe shortly before The Abyss actually came out. And so everybody thinks of it as Adobe. But if you actually read the credits at the beginning of Photoshop, when you first boot it up, it actually has the list of credits, and you'll see John and Thomas Knoll, because they were the ones who actually created it. So there you go. Industrial Light and Magic have been, and also another little known fact is, do you realize that Pixar was originally a Lucasfilm company? It was it was designed as an addition to ILM for the computer effects. And when ILM started to do their own computer effects, they went, oh, well, we don't need that company anymore. So they sold it to Steve Jobs, and Pixar became what Pixar is today. But the Luxo Junior lamp, that was actually created in the days of being with Lucasfilm. So,
well, that's a matter of debate, because now we're not even sure whether or not, you know, that's even licensed to them. So.
Well, no. They have permission to use the lamp in the film. It was whether or not they had permission to make lamps. that was the story from the past.
That's right.
They actually cleared all that up, apparently. But anyway, we have a little bit of follow-up. I was scanning for news stories, and we've talked a little bit about taking, you know, mind-controlling things. If you remember the last couple of weeks, we were talking about, you know, the Jedi mind, you know, playing games with your mind and so forth. I came across this article, which I thought was kind of interesting. There's a company in America, not a company, I should say, a research company in America, that it's the Professor Bradley Greger, a bioengineer at the University of Utah in Salt Lake City. They have actually, they think they've managed to translate thoughts into words, which is actually really kind of interesting. Basically, it was a patient that they were working on who'd had part of their skull removed, because of another operation, and while they had the skull removed, they thought they would test this theory. They were fitted with two button-sized grids of 16 electrodes each on the brain, and the team recorded signals as he repeatedly read the words yes, no, hot, cold, hungry, thirsty, hello, goodbye, more, and less.
Yeah.
The patient then said the words back to a computer, and the brain signals matched the words 76% to 90% of the time. So they're now saying that they may actually be able to put electrodes onto the skull, and knowing what the brain signals are for those words, they might be able to actually read those words for patients who are incapable of speaking and stuff like that. They're saying that they're also working on a voice box that will repeat the words. So the person can actually literally speak through a voice box. Could you imagine how good this would be for somebody like Stephen Hawking?
Yeah.
So it is an amazing piece of technology. So our brains are being examined. We're going to talk a little bit more about brains at the end of the show as well. Brains. But I think that's fantastic. I think that's – so our – the mind stuff is getting there. It really is – we're really starting to tap into what the brain is capable of. Okay. How's your week been, Josh? I've been doing a lot of talking.
That's the reason we're flicking over. It was like that's like mid-news story, Dave. That was a bit odd.
No, that's a changeover from our to our going to our next news story.
All right. I'm fantastic, I guess.
Not tired.
Great. No.
You will be happy to know for the after show, I have not put together the montages. I was kind of looking forward to seeing what I ran out of time, but we may save it and put it onto another show.
I'm fine, man. I've been having a lot of fun and doing a lot of work for the site and so on and so forth.
Fantastic.
So, yeah. Slowly building my new board together for when we relaunch with a new program.
So, oh, yes. And you're going to attempt to go 16.9 and all sorts of stuff as well?
We are going to be trying all sorts of things.
For those who don't know what we're talking about, we're actually talking about DLC, which is Josh's own site and podcast, which is DLC Live.
Yep.
And I've brought up the wrong graphic. That's the graphic I want
that,
to bring up.
That was what I was expecting.
There we go. That's the graphic I was trying to bring up, which you can find at rawdlc.com. So, and if you go over there, Dave Kazicki, who will be a guest on Film Actually today, Nathan Lawrence, Ashley Adams. Who else do you have writing for you?
We have a bunch of them now. We have a guy. Most of them write under pseudonyms. So I'll just say Questorix and Angelus Wren are both writers that write
Fantastic.
For us.
So if you're really into games...
Yeah,
this is the place to go. This is becoming the hot ticket item to go to, and their show is really good. I log in about every 2 or 3 weeks when I tend to be caught up in family stuff, and then go, "Oh shit, they're broadcasting," and come in about halfway through the show. So, although I try and not come in your chat room, and I'm going to put this out there because we have a lot of crossover people. Every time I've come into the DLC chat room, I immediately start having listeners of this show start asking me all about movies and stuff like that. And it's like, this isn't what we're talking about. They're talking about a game right now. Get back to your chat room.
Come on. You know that our chat rooms are very irreverent at best. So.
That's true.
Yeah. That's why they come to watch our show.
All right. So let's get on to some news this week. We are going to come back a little bit later in the show, and we're going to talk about our topic of the week, which I am convinced, and I think Josh agrees with me, but I am convinced that we are heading for the impending robot apocalypse, and we have had evidence in past shows that this is coming. Everybody talks about the zombie apocalypse. I actually think it's the robot apocalypse that's coming, and I have further evidence of that today. So we're going
to
start start piecing together this evidence and seeing if we can actually make heads or tails of the fact that Skynet and the robot apocalypse is coming. And it will be the downfall of humankind. Okay, so that is our goal for today.
So let me get this straight. In a show about accessible tech, we tell everybody that we're doomed because technology is going to kill us all.
We should be. It's our job to warn people about what is coming.
Sure, why not?
It's also our 100th episode, and I thought we'd have some fun. it's just that we've been doing a lot of stories on this, and it has occurred to me that there's a remarkable similarity in conclusion to all of these stories when you start adding them all up. All right, so first news up today is this little guy here. Where is he? Hold on. This little guy right here. This is a plant called Meat Eater, M-E-E-T, not meat as in food meat. And it's on Facebook, and it actually has its own fan page called Meat Eater. And if you go into Facebook and join this group, it feeds the plant.
Oh.
So the idea is that it was an experiment that was put on to see if they could actually get people to be kind to the plant by joining the group and help feed the plant and make it grow.
Yeah.
Where this went astray, though, was the fact that they had so many fans joined the webpage that they killed the plant. And so they've actually...
They didn't think that that would possibly happen.
Well, apparently they're now on Meat Eater 3, and they're still going. And they had attracted more than 5,000 fans from across the world. It was a fivefold spike in the past fortnight, and it literally drowned it in love. So they put another plant in. So you go there. I actually went there. I haven't joined because I'm afraid of killing the plant, but I actually went there and had a look, and yes, the new plant pictures are
up
there.
We should like get everyone in the chat room to do it all at once, and we'll just like off a plant.
Oh,
on
God,
our...
you are just evil.
Oh, come on. They're already up to 3. It's not like it hasn't happened before.
Yes,
I told you Facebook was evil. Delta Knight said, have proof.
Delta Knight said, killed by Facebook. I think there's several people who could probably say that that's coming. Yeah. All right. Now, we also have to talk about today that I am actually kind of pissed off. Now, Josh and I have already discussed this, but I'm going to bring it up on air. The first beta of iOS 4.2 for Apple mobile devices came out. It's coming. The actual finished product will be out in November. And for those who are wondering, yes, that means this is the iOS 4 for your iPads. It'll also be for the iPhone. So this is an update that's going to both. Now, there's a couple of things in here that are fantastic. The fact that they're actually adding AirPrint. Which means that the iPad will finally be able to print natively. At this point, only to HP printers, but more printers will be added to it. So once the structure is in place, it's a matter of adding drivers. But so they're going to have AirPlay, which I think is really, really good. No problem there. This is going to give the iPad all of the features of iOS 4, so it's going to have multitasking. It's going to have Game Center, all that sort of stuff. That's all great. However, where it stung me, and where I got kind of pissed off, was on the side of an iPad, there is a rotation lock switch. Now, the iPhone doesn't have this because the iPhone doesn't change orientation unless the software requires it. In the general usage, if you turn an iPhone on the side, the icons don't all spin. Mm-hmm. But where you always need something on a phone is a silent ring. So the switch on the side does silent ring. You go into the movies, you flick a switch. It's one of the best features of the iPhone, I think. You flick the switch, it goes silent mode, and off you go to the movies.
Yeah.
I don't think the iPad needs that feature, quite frankly, which obviously Apple didn't think it did either. And so they made a rotation lock because the Apple iPad rotates no matter what screen it's on.
Yeah.
And I use the rotate lock all the time because I read comic books in bed, and you lock it, and that way you can read slightly on your side or whatever it is you might be doing. Well, iOS 4.2 is changing that, and I hate it when they take features away.
Yeah.
They're actually, for those in the chat room, it's this switch on the side that we're talking about, this little switch on the side of the iPad. And they're going to change that to be a mute, so a silent switch, and the rotation lock will be the same as the iPhone, which is in software in the multitask bar. Double-click the home button, slide it over, and then tap the button of screen locks. And I just look at it and go, so you're taking away my one little switch to do my quick rotation lock and making me do 4 actions to replace 1 action.
Fair enough.
4 actions to replace 1 action so that I can get a silent on the iPad, where my iPad usually runs at about 2 pips of volume anyway, unless I'm watching a movie where I turn it up. But usually my iPad is in pretty much quiet mode all the time. So I just look at it and go, I don't need this. This pisses me off. Josh, I know you disagree.
I don't disagree. I just think that they're not taking it away. They're just making it a little bit further away from where you would like it to be. And, you know, I'm just going to go out and say that it's a bit of an old man thing to complain about. I mean, it's like 4
or 3. It's not an old man thing to complain
about. It's 3 extra button clicks. Bam, 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 slide, bam. Done.
All right. Who in our chat room has an iPad, and do you think this is a good idea or a bad idea? Let's see. Josh is not an iPad user.
Look, let me just put it this way. I don't care either way because both functions are still there.
Okay, Delta Knight says, what to go fuck themselves? Delta Knight says, me and it's fucked. Northy says, yes, and it's bad. All right, so be an iPad user. Yeah. Do you guys ever think that you would need to put your iPad into silent mode? I mean, that's the question. Is an iPad something that you need to put into silent mode?
Probably not. I'm not arguing that. It's just... It just all seems like a bit of a waste.
Anyway, I just think that when they're doing these updates, sometimes they remove features for no apparent reason. And the answer to that last question was Delta Knight, no, nor the 179, nope, Delta Knight, never. So I think us iPad users need to form a revolt on this and say, don't take away our rotation lock switch.
Absolutely. Why not? I'm sure he'll give it back to you because Callison, he listens so closely to what everybody...
I know, that's the problem. Callison says, no, there is a volume switch for that reason. All right, speaking of doing changes to things that really don't need to be changed. And here I go. I'm going to be my old man self again just for you, Josh. A mouse is a mouse. Right? I mean, so the bottom line is it's a palm-sized device that you roll around the table, whether it's a ball or a laser, and it has a button on it to make things happen. Okay? Yep. That's it. It's a mouse. Why do we continually feel like we need to reinvent the wheel? All right, Apple is the guiltiest party of this, and I'll make that very clear, that Apple has never been able to do a mouse, from their original hockey puck on their iMac to the stupid Mighty Mouse with its little ball that never worked or broke, through to its new Magic Mouse, which I'm actually kind of enjoying playing with. The new Magic Mouse is kind of neat with its back that you can touch. The only problem I'm finding is, though, that just by moving your finger by accident, things are moving around the screen because it's so sensitive. Well, Microsoft, who I actually would go out on a limb and say that I think are the makers of some of the finest mice on the market.
I'll agree with that.
Have decided that with everybody going to touch, they have to defend the mouse. And so they have reinvented it. And this is what they came up with. It's called the Arc Touch Mouse. So it's got the same annoying feature that the Magic Mouse has, which is a touch-sensitive back. Yeah. And it's the blue laser, which I love. Their blue laser is fantastic. Yeah. No, it'll run on pretty much any surface. But it's got this weird-ass design that kind of bends into your hand so that it's not actually... All I can feel like is if I was playing a game or something like that and I was getting excited, what happens if I push down too hard? Do I flatten the mouse out? You know, because it kind of moves up and down. I just think it's the most stupid-looking design. According to Microsoft, they said that the reason people need external mice will not change. Comfort and precision. The Arc Touch mouse just demonstrates again how committed Microsoft is to continuing to bring great new mice to customers. And I would have agreed with them 100% up until I saw this stupid looking thing. Now, you say you've played with this?
No. I had played with their new pocket sized mouse.
Oh, okay.
It's not that thing.
This looks like a banana.
You haven't played with it yet.
That's true. When you get them in store, I will come in and have a look at it. But at the moment, first glance, I look at this and go, I didn't need this.
Well, you didn't really need the Magic Mouse either.
I didn't. And I would actually much prefer to have a straight standard. In fact, on Grace over here, this Mac, she has a Microsoft mouse.
Exactly.
You know, because... I actually really like Microsoft mice. No problem with them. According to Brett Ostrom, who's the Microsoft Hardware Group Manager, he said this is not the first time that the mouse has been threatened. Mm-hmm. Reason why they're designing this thing. He says, look at the 10 years ago when people started buying laptops that had integrated pointers and touchpads. And so they went on the aggressive streak on mice there. Yeah. They're doing this aggressive streak on mice again because Apple has indicated that it's indicating towards a mouse-free future. Mm-hmm. And Microsoft wants to prove, because they firmly believe, that the mouse is the input tool of choice. And so they are pushing for this. I think it's the wrong direction.
Yeah?
I think this particular mouse is the wrong direction. Make better mice. Don't redesign the wheel, is all I can say. I would rather them develop, like with the blue laser, worry about doing things like better sensitivity to buttons, better lasers. You know, the actual shape of a mouse pretty much works.
Yeah, I agree. And as someone that's left-handed, I always struggle a bit with mice because there's always... Like, I've just learned to use a mouse with my right hand because I've just got to the point where using my left is just too hard because with mice being ergonomical now and usually having...
Are
some
you a
sort
lefty?
Of, yeah.
I never noticed that
before. Rotate to one side. Yeah, you wouldn't because I just learned to use a mouse with the right hand because it was just too complicated.
And yeah, they've got the tools that in software they can, you know, flip the buttons, but the mice are designed...
Yes.
To be held in...
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're designed one-handed. Yeah. So, for people that have always struggled with that, maybe they'll like it. And, it is a question of, you know, sort of how robust is it, and how the whole idea of
flexing is the weird issue to hear. So I would like to actually play with one. Hold one in my hand. Microsoft, if you're listening, send us a demo unit.
Yeah,
we'd like to have a look at
Give us a play.
Damn straight. Okay, I like the fact that in our chat room, who is it? Somebody here. Oh, that is Numero Zero says input tool of choice. What happened to Kinect? Yeah, I actually think that we're heading away from mice. I think we're heading towards Minority Report type stuff.
Just something to bring up from the gaming department. There is a current thing that's happening. It's a very big thing. There's really three major ones now. There's the GDC, which is the Gaming Development Conference.
Yep.
There's E3, which everybody knows. That's Electronic Entertainment Expo. And then there's one which is happening right now, which is TGS.
Mm-hmm. And there's also CeBIT as well, which goes around the world,
too. Yeah, but CeBIT's more of a CeBIT's technology
small.
Thing.
Yeah, it's marketplace.
Whereas TGS is Tokyo Gamer Show.
Right.
This is a huge one. And Microsoft said something which I think is quite possibly one of the strangest calls you would have. Like, it furthers your belief that Microsoft are completely detached from reality because they actually were saying that they think Kinect, right?
Kinect.
Their camera, the one that everyone in our chat room, if you ask, will say, I'm not interested or I don't think I'll get it. They believe that it will outsell the iPad.
Oh, really?
Just thought you might like to know that, Dave. I thought that might kind of brighten your day a little.
Really?
Yeah. Apparently.
I don't see that happening.
Yeah, no, neither do I.
Delta Knight's laughing. Pop Shot, wow. Delta Knight, what a load. Our chat room's gone off on that one.
Yeah,
look, I'm curious to play with Kinect, and I'll probably buy one because, you know, I like my Xbox and I love the idea of Kinect.
Yeah.
I don't see it as a computer. I don't see it as something that I'm going to use.
Oh, and quickly, I bought Move and have installed it and used it. It's as annoying as a Wii Remote and all the games so far.
Exactly like a Wii Remote. That's the only problem with it.
Well, I'll give it one thing. It's a fuckload more sensitive. I played a shooting game with it, and I was...
Kinect is cheaper than an iPad, says Callison. Well, there is that. But you need to have the Xbox to go with it, so it ends up being more expensive. Mm. So if you haven't got the Xbox already...
But take into account all the people that have an Xbox.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. That's kind of creative bookkeeping, though.
I tend to kind of fall to the same side, though. I don't think.
Oh, look! With the installed user base of Xbox, there is a good chance that they might outsell iPad, but it's a different market.
Yeah,
I don't even think you can. It's like comparing apples to oranges. It's not really the same market at all. Anyway,
it's a strange thing to kind of say to someone, or a strange thing to kind of, you know,
it is.
I don't see it.
No. All right, well, I want to get on to the impending robot apocalypse, so let's barrel through a couple more news stories really fast. This one I thought would be close to your heart, Josh. This is a study that was done and published in the Journal of Current Biology. It basically is looking at the effects of action games, in particular first-person shooters. It actually says that the New York's University of Rochester took a group of 18 to 25-year-old non-gamers. Very important. Non-gamers. Split them into two groups. Half played 50 hours of shooting games, such as Call of Duty 2 and Unreal Tournament. And the other half played 50 hours of slow-moving strategy games like The Sims. The results were that the first group, who did the first-person shooters, were 25% better at decision-making. Action game players, according to their quote, action game players make more correct decisions per unit time. If you are a surgeon or you are in the middle of a battlefield, that can make all the difference.
Wow.
So basically they're now saying that action games, in particular first-person shooters, are good for your decision-making skills. So all those out there who play lots of action games, good for you. And those who don't, maybe you need to play more.
Oh, God.
So I thought that was really good. I love research about games because there'll be a research out next week where they'll say, action games pollute your mind, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Nobody can ever really make heads or tails of it all. Now, just going to really, really quickly...
I actually think it wasn't a study of shooting games. I think the guys just really wanted to have a mess to play party. Just get a whole bunch of people in a room and shoot.
Absolutely, damn straight. Come on, 50 hours straight of action games? You've done that.
Shut up.
Oh, somebody's mowing a yard. Can you hear that?
Anyway, yes.
Anyway, we'll just ignore that and we'll keep plugging through.
Yeah.
It is the hazards of recording a show in the middle of the day. So, okay, this is just a really, really, really quick one because we don't have the data on it yet. Next week we will actually revisit this, but just wanted to mention it this week so that people can go out and get it if you are a PC user. And this is not, let me stress, buyer beware. This is not for... first timers, okay? Because anytime you download or install beta software, you run the risk of things being buggy, crashing, having to file reports, and it's all par for the course. There's no customer service on betas, okay? So if you are not a really au fait, comfortable computer user, don't do this. But if you are one of our chat room people and you are one of the more hardcore geeks, IE9. The public beta has been released. Now, IE9 is getting rave reviews. It's got much more Chrome-like interface. Sleeked right down. It's very pretty. I've installed it on this machine over here. It's they've removed all the buttons from it. They've just cleaned it all up. So it's a really sleek, clean interface. Microsoft has gone on a completely different approach. They've actually said it shouldn't be in your face. A browser should just be there to get you to where you need to go. It's taken them a long time to wake up to this fact. Yeah. And interesting fact, Internet Explorer 9 is smaller file size-wise than any of the competing browsers on the market right now. So they've actually streamlined this thing down.
Wow,
to
man,
hell.
That's so not Microsoft.
I know. Now, the other thing is, like Windows 7 beta, it's good. It's not buggy. It actually runs really well. Now, this is only for Vista and Windows 7 users. If you are prior to that, it's not going to work. So if you're still on XP, you can't get it. If you're on XP, get Chrome. Okay, Chrome is the closest you're going to get to this. Now, we will talk about this more next week after I've had a week of running it. I only installed it yesterday, but I just wanted to make sure everybody just go to Google, type in Internet Explorer 9 beta, go straight to the Microsoft page, have a look at it, and if you feel like you're wanting to do a bit of testing, download it and have a look at it because it is well worth having a look at. And I think that you know what? Microsoft may be back into the browser wars here.
That's so cool.
So they've been kind of flailing in the browser war for a while.
You have to give them credit. I mean, it's been a long time since they've kind of really stepped up the mark.
IE4?
Oh, dude, man. the nail in the coffin for me was when they they changed the entire top system. And now every time I use it on work computers, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm just looking at it going, where is just my options button?
Well, there is, I'll let you know with the IE9, there is a learning curve on this because the first thing I did was I went, where the hell is everything? Because all the menus are gone.
Yeah.
And they've put it all into, there's literally three tool buttons and everything is buried in those three tool buttons. So it's going to take a little bit of getting used to, but I'm really curious to have a play with this. So now we've had people saying Firefox for the win, Firefox is doing fine. I actually have gone away from Firefox.
Sorry, guys, I have to actually agree with Dave on this. If you're still using Firefox, really abandon it. It's a sinking ship.
Firefox has become what IE was. It's starting to get so bogged down.
I've done tests recently because I was doing the switch over, and the difference in the system resource use between Chrome and Firefox. Firefox is ridiculous. Yeah. Like, I mean,
look,
guys are going to give crap to IE, even IE8 works better for me.
Well,
than
quite frankly, on this machine here, I use IE8 as the primary.
Yeah.
The primary
Firefox
browser
is just completely, internally corrupted itself because of the use of add-ons and all this sort of stuff. Everything to get things going. There's so much loaded in every time you load that program up. It's just ridiculous.
Now, I'd like to stress, though, that a lot of people are saying Chrome is really good. Chrome doesn't work on my computer. Chrome is this. Chrome is actually a really good browser. If you can get it up and running and, you know, everything is working fine, Chrome is fast and sleek. And a little bit of information for you, what you may not know, is that Chrome is the same technology. It's built on exactly the same rendering engine, which is WebKit, which Apple Safari is built on. So these two are exactly the same under the hood. Safari on PC runs like shit, but runs really well on Mac. Chrome runs really well on PC and Mac. So, but it's the same core engine that's running both of them. Safari is just, it's, once again, Apple does not know how to write PC software.
Nope.
They don't know how to write the interfaces. So, but it works really well. Safari is my browser of choice on the Mac. And I got to say, on this one, IE9 at the moment is what I'm using on this one. So we'll see how we go. But anyway, we'll report back next week. You don't have a Windows 7. You do have a Windows 7 machine. Grab the beta. We'll test drive this thing.
We'll test drive it.
Okay, one really, really quick one. I just want to say that this is just cool tech. It's not we don't want to go into a lot of detail about it. It's just for fun. But if you guys are Star Trek fans or Star Wars fans, I just got to tell you right now that tractor beams are being designed.
Oh, yeah.
And I am so keen on this. Okay, there's no practical use for them yet. It is not like we've created a tractor beam that can suck a spaceship into another spaceship or anything like that. But the concept, and this is where we get into cool tech, it's conceptually, Australian National University has been moving particles a meter and a half using only the power of light. It says here, very tiny particles, admittedly, but particles nonetheless. It says, device shines a hollow laser beam. I love that concept, a hollow laser beam.
Yeah.
Around tiny glass particles. The laser heats the area around the particles, but the particles stay cool and start drifting. When they stray, this is straight from news.com.au, by the way. When they stray near the hot laser beam, they get nudged back into the center by the heated molecules bouncing around them. More heat is introduced under and off to the sides of the particles and gently force them up the hollow laser tube. The speed and direction of the particles moving can then be manipulated by changing the brightness of the beam. How cool is that?
I think really cool is what I would say. It is fantastic.
Okay, we're only talking about particles right now.
I don't care.
Come on, this is gonna... Now, the sad part to this is that if you think you've got your tractor beams from Star Trek, unfortunately, this doesn't work in outer space.
For two reasons.
The main reason, though, is that it uses heated gas to actually push the particle in the tube, and you can't do that in a vacuum of outer space. So, bummer, but it is something that we might be able to do on the human beings. Now, the only question that we had, of course, Josh and I brought up, which was that if you increase the size of this thing that was actually big enough to be able to move a person, say, although it is cool in the center, I don't know, it just worries me that the outside would have to be so hot to be able to do that it might fry us in the beam, so... But
it
the center
would be
is
the
cool.
Kind of thing you wouldn't want to miss with.
No, okay. Cut somebody in half.
Cut a leg off or something. Yeah,
new. Anyway, so I think that's cool. How many people got in the chat room now? The chat room's growing. Hopefully by the after show we got a whole host of people in here. Okay, so let's talk about this robot apocalypse. The impending robot apocalypse is upon us, and let's recap a little bit. I love
the way that like Dave just finds and creates and collects all of these stories relating to this.
You know, when you've got nothing better to do with your time.
Oh, hey, man. No, don't get me wrong. I agree.
All right, we're going to kind of whip through this because we are running a little bit late. We got to keep on track today. But we will talk about this for the next few minutes though, and say, let's recap. First of all, in episode 95...
Yeah.
We had an Aussie company that produced the the defense robots. Remember the ones used for target practice?
Oh, I do.
Okay. these were the, for those who didn't listen to the episode, I say go back and listen to the episode. And we also have the video on geekactually.com you can watch.
Yeah, yeah.
But basically, they were smart targets. The idea was that the military could use these bots as targets because they could basically react. They could be programmed to hide, react, scatter, move, just like humans. And then, of course, at the time, we said, what if they actually managed to gain some sort of sentience on the controller? Wouldn't that be kind of scary? But luckily, that couldn't happen at this point in time.
No, because we didn't have technology that would allow that sort of
thing. No, but then in episode 99... we came up with DARPA coming up with their new PAL system. And once again, the video is on geekactually.com, and you can go listen to that episode. And the PAL system was learning computers. The idea that our defense grid would be run by these computers who actually learned from your actions and from their mistakes.
And as our statement went last time, what could possibly go wrong?
Absolutely. And then in episode 97, I know those are slightly out of order, but in 97... we talked about the UK University of Hertfordshire who were creating robots with emotions. And we thought, oh, because that's what robots really need, isn't it?
Yep.
They need emotional responses.
They need to be irrational.
So that's... we add emotions to our PAL system. When we get to work in the morning, we say, can you bring up grid 59? I believe there's activity. Go to hell. Where were you last night? Why'd you come in so late?
I missed you.
You don't treat me well. When was the last time you brought me flowers? Yes, I think putting emotions into these computers is, I think we're heading into HAL territory in 2001. So, okay, that's our recap. So, that's bad enough, okay?
That's pretty bad.
This week, we find out that a Japanese company is a Japanese company is producing robots. Now, I will say that this is actually the fourth generation of these robots. And I will quote... I will quote from this article from, where did I get this article from? news.com.au, which actually says, hold on, I've lost the quote now. Where is it? There's a wonderful quote here. It says, here it is. Humans are one step closer to being replaced by machines after Japanese researchers unveiled a model they hope could lead to humanoid menial workers. Now, that sounds like...
That alone scares the crap out.
Well, it sounds to me a little bit like they want to make robot slave labor. Now, let's add emotions to that and go, do we feel an uprising coming on with these robots? Now, I would like to point out, I've got a photo here for our chat room. If you are listening to the audio, you can either go back and look at this replay of this video, or we'll have the link to this story in our show notes. But this picture I just needed to show Josh because, and the chat room as well, because the Japanese aren't content in just making humanoid robots. I love the fact that whenever they design robots, it always looks a little bit like it comes out of Voltron or the Transformers. Or something like that.
And I love how badly plasticky they look.
I know, and I love this one in the middle even has like little wings on his helmet. You know, it's like you sit there and go, really? The one that freaks me out is the human-looking one on the end.
Yeah, that
skin.
One's going to be trouble. That's going to be the first one that's going to kick crap.
That one kind of looks like, you know, Battle Angel Alita or something.
No, actually, probably that one's going to be the first one to go because the others are going to start complaining that she looks prettier than them.
That's right, the emotion chip. That's right, the emotion chip.
Yeah, no, screw
it. Now, it says here that Noriyuki Kanahira, robotics systems manager of Kawada, said, "We designed a working robot in the image of a lean, well-muscled track and field athlete." Really? That's not what I saw. I saw Voltron.
Yeah.
It says here that the latest athlete model is near a 10-year-old series updates the feminine catwalk strutting karaoke singing HRP-4C. This is now the HRP-4. And basically he says it is Japan's urgent task for the early 21st century to develop robots that can carry out simple repetitive works. Doesn't Japan have like one of the highest unemployment rates in the world at the moment with people living in the street? Why do we want to replace more workers with robots?
Because then none of us will have to do anything.
But these people already don't. I don't understand.
I didn't say it made sense.
I don't understand. I look at it and just go, we already have an unemployment problem. Why are we trying to make machines to take more jobs away? And of course, take over the world. Because... to add to their emotions, here's the next step in our robot apocalypse. All right, let's recap. Oh no, we're not over yet. God, I'm convinced on this. People talk about the zombie apocalypse. Mm-hmm. I don't think the zombie apocalypse is coming. I think it's the robot apocalypse.
I think the robots are going to bring the zombie apocalypse.
It's funny you should say that. We'll come back to that point. Hold that thought.
All right, I'm holding on to it.
Hold that thought. How about this? All right, how about this? We have a robot that has emotions.
Right.
Can learn from its mistakes.
Yeah.
What else do we? What else can it do at this point? Oh, and is good in the battlefield. All
and
right?
Can dance.
And can dance. Of course, can dance. It's very important. And
I
is
actually
an, and
read
is,
that article.
And is an athlete.
Yeah. So it can run really fast. It can outdance us.
Now the next thing is we need to create better fine motor skills. Obviously.
Yeah.
Right. So a biotech wizards in Britain. And they've published this in the British Journal of Natural Materials, has now created an artificial human-like skin. Now, this is different to the skin that we talked about before. This is actually, it hasn't gone into mass production yet. They've come up with this artificial skin-like material that is actually embedded with electrodes and can be used, or they believe, in skin grafting. So on humans, they'll actually be able to replace areas of skin, and it's sensitive to the touch. It actually has all the responses and everything else that normal skin would have. And I just read...
How was that linking into...
Well, I just read that and said, we could actually start to coat our robots in this skin because it says here that this is an advance towards replacing today's clumsy robots and artificial limbs with smarter, touch-sensitive upgrades.
Oh, yay.
It says humans generally know how to hold a fragile egg without breaking it. Robots don't. With this, they'll have sensation of touch, so they'll actually be able to do all of these small, small little intricate tasks. This is all about replacing us. Remember, we're trying to replace us. It says here, if we ever wanted a robot that could unload the dishes, no, I don't. For instance, we want to make sure it doesn't break the wine glasses in the process. But we'd also want the robot to grip the stock pot without dropping it, or grip our throats and rip our heads off. I'm editorial.
That's actually not written in the article.
No, that's not in the article. But yeah, if we want a robot that can kill us and feel the pleasure of our sinews between its fingers, then, we need the touch-sensitive skin. So there you go. We now have robots with emotions that can learn. We're combining all our technology together. They have touch sensitive skin to make them more realistic. They're emotional and they have military skills.
Dave, I think we need another what could possibly go wrong.
We need a what could possibly go wrong theme, I think, at this point. It says here, Delta Knight, robots can rip out our hearts carefully.
Exactly.
Popshot says Chuck Norris is a robot. There you go. I think the first one is already off the production line.
No, that was the test. That was the test one, was it?
And Northy says a new line of sex toys. I think the Japanese are probably already working on that one.
I think the Japanese probably already have those.
Now, last in this, we've got our army forming. We have our CPU. We have our master control system. We have our army forming. But do you guys remember that last Terminator film, which we will remain unnamed because Josh hates it so much and I fear his wrath? But do you remember the last the Terminator movie? They had
that
those...
awesome scene where he hacks that thing with an eyeball from a robot, which he plugs into a computer and just scans it.
That's the one. But do you remember there's that one sequence where they're at the lake and there's all the swimming robotic snakes? Which actually was kind of a cool scene. Well, you know what? I think in our robot apocalypse, no robot apocalypse would be complete without the robot snakes. And look, guys.
The Bio Robotics Lab at Carnegie Mellon University are creating snake robots. These snake robots can use their many internal degrees of freedom to thread through tightly packed volumes, accessing locations that people and machinery otherwise cannot use. These highly articulated devices can coordinate their internal degrees of freedom to perform a variety of locomotion.
Right, so for our audio listeners, what you're actually seeing is a robotic snake, which has crawled across the ground and is now climbing a tree. Swimming. I don't know about you, but I think that's really creepy.
Is that where it like locks around the tree?
And then just starts rolling up.
Just instantly makes me think of someone's throat.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're wrapping around a person and just crushing them to death. Yeah.
And you're right, Dave. The last.
It's the last shot that's the creepiest. All right, ready? I see you.
That robot is just going straight to the defense systems.
Apparently, it still at this point needs a person to control it. They haven't worked out an artificial technology that can actually do all of the complicated moves it has to do. But remember, we have learning computers who can take control of it, so there's no problem there. Now, I would like to point out that it showed it crawling, it showed it climbing, and according to this article, it says it has a versatile range of movements, allowing it to travel, and I highlighted this, swim and climb, both around and inside cylinders, all right?
I love the fact that they're not even thinking about the fact that we've already shown this in movies. Like,
and Northy says in our chat room, a new line of sex toys? Nor that you've got a one-track mind.
Seriously, dude.
All right. So now the other thing that I will say about this snake is that they are working on much smaller units. And there is actually one practical use for these.
Oh, really? So then we're going to get tiny ones, too.
Little tiny ones. Because this is the part that really kind of terrified me, where it actually says that they can make the medical devices where they could actually use them to go inside bodies.
No.
It is said it would be much less invasive than surgery. What, having a robot snake crawl through your body? I don't know about that. Anyway, all right, now...
I think it's still up for the knife. I'm like, no, I'm good, thank you.
All right, last story in our robot apocalypse. And I think this comes back to Josh's original point. This is the last point on this, which is people talk about the zombies. People want the zombie apocalypse, right? Well, DARPA, and I just got to read you this because I love this.
I love DARPA.
I love DARPA. DARPA, by the way, is for the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, and they're a division of the U.S. military, and they are Skynet. Quite frankly, they are Skynet. They're coming
they
up with
will
the
be.
They will be Skynet. And according to news.com.au, I love the way they refer to them. They said, the U.S. Army's Mad Science Department. All right, so according to this, DARPA has says it's working on helmets that use transcranial pulsed ultrasounds. And basically what these are going to do is use helmets for mind control on their troops.
Oh, good.
So all I can think is the thinking emotional computer system takes control of the helmets and turns all of the troops into zombie followers. All right. It says here that these helmets can influence a soldier's brain. Now, they look at it. I mean, DARPA always looks at everything so innocently. They look at it as a way of helping the brain in times of stress. It says here that during a time where the brain might have received damage during combat, for instance, you can activate the helmet and it does deep tissue pulses that basically help contain the damage so that it doesn't spread and might actually save your life, right? But right, I look at it and go, or you could, you know, activate it from a distance and basically turn your soldiers into super soldiers. Because one of the things it can
the
do.
The other thing is. Oh, okay.
One of the things it can do is it says here that it can actually nullify pain.
Oh.
Because, of course, that's what it's doing, is it's helping the brain.
Well, because the other things that I immediately think of when I start thinking of this is if you have control of certain areas of the brain, turn off fear.
Well, there's that, too. I mean, if you have that sort of access to the brain at that point, you could start playing.
You know what? Like, let them build the robots, because we'll send the robots into war. They can do the fighting. And
we start, messing with our soldiers.
We start messing with people's heads, man. Seriously, dude,
Well, put it this way, the helmet is designed.
Splice got it right, man. We have far too much.
The mad scientist at DARPA. According to this article, it stimulates the brain through implants in the helmet. So it doesn't actually go into the brain, though, because one of the things they're saying is we don't want invasive surgery. This thing can actually penetrate.
Oh, yeah, no, because, I mean, like, you know, we just want to mess with the mind. We don't actually want to dig into it.
How's this quote for you? This is from Dr. William Tyler of the Arizona State University. The quote reads, remotely and directly stimulate brain circuits without requiring surgery. Doesn't that just sound fun?
Very.
Now, this follows, mind you, if this doesn't work, if you remember going back a few episodes, we actually talked about the idea of creating zombies using nanoparticles by injecting nanoparticles in and being able to stimulate parts of the brain using heating up the nanoparticles.
Yeah.
So that's the other way of doing it. But this one sounds much more elegant.
Yeah, well, yeah.
This one actually makes me think of an episode of Doctor Who, the one with the Cybermen, where they all wore these things.
With the little, the ear
things,
silver-painted earphone. Yeah,
yeah, this actually makes me think of that. So our thinking emotional robots with artificial skin controlling the battle bots and being able to dance will be controlling the brain-stimulating helmets, taking control of the world's military and turning them into zombies. I think I have made my point. Don't you? I think case closed. The impending robot apocalypse is coming. And the part that I put in the show notes here is the best part of this entire story is the fact that we're doing it to ourselves.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. You absolutely.
And that's the thing. We're making these bloody things and we're not even seeing what we're doing. Now, don't get me wrong. I love technology and I'm actually partially joking here because I think the tech is actually really interesting.
Well, dude, I don't think you and me have nothing to worry about because when the, giant cyber robots come to us, we'll just reprogram them.
That's right, damn straight.
And ride around on the backs of giant robots.
And if we've learned anything from that last Terminator movie, all you need is a USB key.
Yeah, a USB key, or all you need to do is remove one of their eyes and then you can just plug that into a thing.
That's
and
right.
Type, what was it, password?
Something.
Override?
Yeah.
Override.
You just type override, plug in your USB key, type override, and you solve all problems.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Control alt delete, man. Just close in process task. We're done.
Delta Knight says, meh, we're geeks. Sex on the brain is normal. That's true. That's so true. All right. I think that's it. I think we've made our points. I think we're going to get ourselves out of here for the day. Unless you've got anything to add.
No.
Has Chatroom's got anything to add here?
I'm too afraid. I'm going to go home and crawl up under my bed.
Raggy says, control via Bluetooth. Sweet. Thank God Apple does not have real Bluetooth. Oh, that's cold. Apple's Bluetooth works, dude. All right. We are going to get ourselves out of here, and I've just noticed that our Skype lines are actually starting to light up already. Guys, you're a bit early, a bit early. All right. First of all, let's do a little bit of housekeeping before we get out of here and say that if you've got anything to add to the robot apocalypse, we would love to hear your feedback. Send it to
If you're one of the people working on one of these projects.
Damn straight. Get in contact have with here, us. Where are we? Tech Action. Here we go. All right. So it's geektech@geekactually.com, and that's our feedback line, our feedback email. Anything you guys want to know, if you've got any requests for the show, if you've got requests for topics of the day, anything like that, send it to us. We always like to hear from you guys. And if you have any articles, if you've got any further evidence for or against the robot apocalypse, please send me the articles. We will do follow-up on this. I'm convinced it's coming. Okay. You can also do it via voice if you want to send us a voicemail. It's a Sydney number. It's 02-8011-3167. Now, I have also found out that finally the Skype is working the way it's meant to work as well. So the only problem with using Skype is you have to get permission, because we don't have it just open to the public because you get so much spam. But our Skype ID is Geek Actually. Hard to forget. So it's Geek Actually. If you do want to send voicemail via Skype, send the request to become on our phone list. And if we remember you or know you from the chat room, make sure you put a little note in there telling us who you are. We'll approve you, and then it'll be open for you to
them. Don't try and sell us stuff.
We will, anybody who, if we get spam in there, we just immediately delete it, or anything that looks like spam. So try not to even be jokey about it, because we will just delete them off. We don't have time to investigate everything. So if you are in Sydney, though, if you are a local, the phone number is the easiest way, because the phone number will just go through. But for our internationals, Geek Actually is the Skype line, and it's a lot cheaper doing it that way because it's free. All right, we also have our Cafe Press site, which has our stuff. Our new swag isn't up yet. You can see our new logo is in the corner of the screen there. It's not up yet because we've been so busy getting today ready, but we will. I'm going to work on that this week, so we will have new T-shirts and stuff with the new logos, and that's at cafepress.com.au/geekactually. And remember, we do have a Facebook page, which I have actually been updating more frequently recently, which you can find at facebook.com/geekactually. And also, if you want to follow us on Twitter, I always post out when the shows are going out and stuff like that on Twitter. It's my personal Twitter. Yeah. Feel free to follow. It's David McVeigh on Twitter. So you can follow that as well. And make sure you do check out, and how about these Swisho graphics? It's been a while since we've had these ones. We do have two other podcasts. One is Film Actually, which is our movie podcast, which is coming up right now. It's coming up next after this.
Not today. Right now, because we're still doing this.
Well, not right now, but in about 15 minutes. And it's today we are doing two feature films. We're doing The Sorcerer's Apprentice and The Last Airbender. So it should be fun. And that was Josh's arm in the screen. And we have another show, of course, which is coming up in about an hour and a half's time, which is
called Actually.
Actually, which is the Geek Actually after show, which is kind of like the continuation of the original Geek Actually show. It's a free-for-all. This week's episode is just a 100th episode celebration. We have some clips from the past. We have guests coming on. We have all sorts of stuff. We're going to reminisce about our time on the show. And this is not actually just Geek Actually. We're going to talk about 2 years of podcasting. So it's going to cover the tech shows, the film shows, platforms, the gaming show. It's going to cover everything. So we're going to have a bit of fun with that as well. So do find out. Now, if you are an audio listener, all of these are available on iTunes. Just search for Film Actually, Tech Actually, or the Geek Actually After Show. If you want to watch us live, geekactually.com/live, starting at 12 p.m. every Saturday, and you can just watch. We record all three shows back to back. Josh, you also have a show. I know you've already done a plug, but do it again.
All right. I run a games. I co-run a games website. We do games, we do news, we do entertainment, we do anything which comes to our mind. We have a lot of opinion sections, and we get a lot of exclusive footage at the moment, which is really, really cool. You guys should head over and check us out. It is awesome. There is a bunch of new stuff up there from the last few days, and there's a couple going up with a new TGS coverage post, which will be up hopefully by tonight. You guys should go check it out. It's really awesome, and we're awesome, and you know,
and we're awesome.
I had nothing.
Do check it out. It is a good show. You can also subscribe to that on iTunes. Just look for DLC Live.
And hopefully within 2 weeks, we should have a completely new platform to launch on, so things will be a lot more high-tech.
Yeah.
Not quite this high-tech, but high-tech still.
Well, you know, ours is high-tech until it crashes, so...
Yeah.
We do the
look,
best.
Dude, as a friend of mine said, even network TV crashes. So.
That's true. In fact, our Foxtel box last night, for no apparent reason, just died. I mean, awesome. All the lights went off, everything went off, no power, everything else was on, just the box just shut itself down,
yeah.
And then about 5 minutes later, just turned itself back on. I went, that was the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life. What the hell was that? Robot apocalypse. That's what it was.
It's coming.
It was coming.
Starting with our Skynet box. It's starting with our digital boxes.
My Foxtel box got emotions. It didn't like the show. It didn't like the show we were watching. All right. I think that's it. I think we're going to get out of here. I think we plugged everything. Oh, no. We should plug one more thing before we go. Just really quickly, because he has done such a good job for us, which, of course, is Josh Spencer. And our new artwork is phenomenal. And you can find him at attackninja.blogspot.com.
Okay,
so I thought we'd just give him another shout-out, because he is well worth going and having a look at. We're going to get ourselves out of here now. I want to say thank you very much for joining us. Thank you, chat room. Film actually is coming up next. So we'll see you next week. What do you reckon?
Absolutely.
Bye. Bye-bye.